so that the local laws would govern how that's accessed and used. Pretty reasonable. They were concerned because there are some Canadian-owned companies out there that have subscription-based systems where the data could potentially reside on some server in Canada. And so there was a concern there. So we asked that this rapid system be one that we own, because the other concern was cost control. There are stories that I was told about some systems out there that start off very inexpensive for the dealers and then over time escalate into this high transaction fee kind of a scenario. And so the other thing we said was, again, we want to own this system so that we can purchase and control the price. Am I going on a tangent? Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask a few questions when you're ready. So the issue of metals, which we are victims of, and in addition to businesses, as Ms. Crane mentioned, city transportation has been the victim of thievery because we have a lot of metal in the right-of-way, various kinds. Knowing that you haven't been able to get to it yet, this has taken the focus of your time up to this point. What are your early thoughts in sort of approaching a better system of preventing stolen metals from making their way to the market?
Well, let me first start off by saying that I don't currently have the responsibility of addressing the metal theft issue in my detail. There was a time when the spy unit had many more resources and they did investigate metal theft. We're not to that point. We're building back from two detectives to four detectives and some additional personnel. So our detail hasn't been given direction to address the metal theft issue yet.
Is there someone in the Bureau, any detail or group that's addressing that?
I do know that there's some command staff as well as some people from my detail who have been working with the focus group to develop the state legislation which just passed regarding metal recyclers.
I know from having visited one of the precincts that a lot of the detectives and officers assigned to work special details have been assigned to work metal thefts. Mm-hmm. But it's more by each precinct and what they see as some of the problems out there rather than a bureau-wide effort. So that'll be the next phase.
Yes.
We get reports, and I'm sure the mayor knows more than, sometimes we'll have an entire, street of businesses, and if there are things in the right-of-way that have been stripped, especially of copper,
mm-hmm.
be especially vulnerable.
It is a significant problem, no doubt. Yes.
I'm Mike Braggs. I'm the commander of East Precinct, and as the mayor said, most of the metal theft. Most of the metal theft is handled precinct by precinct.
State your name again, Mike.
Mike Krebs, Portland Police East Precinct, and as the mayor said, predominantly the metal thefts are addressed by each specific precinct. North and Northeast seem to have the biggest problem with metal theft. We're also starting to get it up in East Precinct along the MAX line, where people are starting to steal some of the stuff that's left behind by the workers there. So it's dealt precinct by precinct right now. I'm also currently the commander of the SPY. SPY came over to my East Precinct in springtime, and so Troy is currently under my command. One thing, Commissioner Leonard, you were very concerned about this new property, and Troy and I had some conversations about that because I was very concerned myself. What will happen, though, the criminals will adapt. If they're stealing new stuff and no longer buying it, what they'll do, they'll take it and take the wrapping off and mess up the box a little bit. So they'll adapt. So it's when I first heard Troy tell me this, I thought, oh, no, I don't want people buying, new stuff. It doesn't make any sense. But it also, when Troy explained to me, it allows us to have a tracking system to go and find out these prolific shoplifters. And it also helps us to track it back to the place and then work with the actual Walmart and the Home Depots to help identify this stuff as stolen.
That tracking system is separate from the rapid system that you're working on?
Well, the tracking system will be the rapid system.
It is the rapid system.
Correct. That is not implemented yet. It's something we have to work on.
When will that be?
It's going to require a lot of collaboration between us and the secondhand dealers. This is not going to be a simple thing.
I want to be
fix.
Really clear about that. I appreciate your attempt to do that. I'm a little concerned about how far you're willing to collaborate because we have to have some tools that make sense to get to stolen property. And if getting to that place, you're thinking that maybe it makes sense to continue to allow them to buy new stuff. I'll defer to your judgment. But I guess I do not want to compromise away what the interest of the public is, and that's to remove stolen items from the inventory of items sold by secondhand stores.
Right, sir. And that's the last thing that I want. My job is to protect and serve the citizens of Portland. And the last thing that I want is to have them be victimized by criminals, and us not doing our job. I think that the important piece is that, you know, the collaboration builds trust, and we got to make sure that this is a workable situation, because if we put them in a place where they really can't abide by these rules, then we'll start getting stuff underneath the table and stuff like that with some of these secondhand dealers. We have to develop that trust and work with them to what's doable. Otherwise, we're going to have this suspicion and lack of cooperation. That's even going to be worse. So I think the communication piece, the gentleman was sitting here, you know, indicated that he was very skeptical at first. It's important we have the trust of the people we're working with, and we work with those people on a daily basis. When we develop that trust, we'll increase communication and will allow us also to, you know, to target these criminals.
So what's the timeline?
You know, I don't have an exact timeline, sir. Any idea, Troy?
We have an RFP in place that has, a company has won the bid. We could move forward next week and ask you for funding if that was what you wanted to do. We could be moving forward in a week. That company, if we went with them and they sold us the system, says they could have the system up and running in about 3 weeks. So if we had the funding, we could have the system in place and wired and running in 3 weeks. But it's more complicated than that, because we have to work with all of these 140 businesses to find ways that they can do this data entry at the time of their transaction in such a way that will not negatively impact the way they do their business.
What's a legitimate concern they have of implementing that system right away?
A legitimate concern they have about implementing it at all, you mean? Or,
well, you said we could do it in 3 weeks, but you want to work with them. What's one of the things they've identified that you need to work with them on that prevents this?
Okay. One example. Some of the larger stores have an in-house system that they use to keep track of their pawns and buys, the amount of interest they charge, if this person's a repeat customer, and that sort of thing. The system that we want to purchase, we have to develop a way for that system to interface with the system that all their employees are trained to use already.
Certainly other communities have similar kinds of enforcement tools. How have they done it?
Same through that process, developing computer patches so that that system communicates with this system. Some of those patches are already written.
Why can't we buy the system and then start working on the patches?
We could. I'll tell you, on a personal level, I have made a personal commitment to the people in the industry to look at all of the issues surrounding the use of this system in their
businesses. That's why I'm asking. What is something they said to you that stopped? I mean, the patch seems to me like a technological fix. Okay, we can do that. Maybe we would even pay for that. I don't know. But what is a legitimate reason they have said, you know, entering this piece of information on that form is not a good idea because?
I got to have to tell you, I haven't heard that.
Okay.
The support is here with the industry to move forward.
You'll
with
a, chance to testify
a system.
In a second.
But there are issues on how to use this system. Mr. Calvert's here, who could talk about their system. They have a certain type of operating system on their computer.
And I'm not asking to get into that detail here. Sure. I'm just trying to figure out how to move this forward and not get bogged down. And so what I'm looking for is a date, a timeline, something I can write down so at that point I can call you and say, where are you at?
What we can, sir, is when we get done here, Troy and I can discuss it, have a longer conversation, and get back with you with a timeline.
Okay.
That would be good. I mean, the last thing that I want to do is have this thing linger on
for
a year and a half. That's not acceptable.
Oh, right.
It's a problem out there, and it's something that I want to get done, and we'll attack. And I want to make sure we have the best tool possible to attack the problem. Mm-hmm. And there are some off-the-shelf things you can buy today. We could actually go into there's a product out there that we could probably start it up today.
Because I'm going to vote for this based on your representation. When that system is up, you'll be able to track items and determine via the computer and the program whether something's stolen or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hanging my hat on that system being in place.
Right. As long as the victim gives us a serial number, we've got to be able to track it, because a lot of stuff is stolen. And if they don't have a serial number or a way to identify that, we're never going to recover it.
Right.
It's like with Walmart. If we can't get the serial numbers from Walmart of all the stolen saws, there's not much that we can do.
I'm pretty sure their security people would be very interested in cooperating to help us recover their stolen items.
Absolutely, but it's up to them to track these, right. These things that are going out their front door, and it's sometimes difficult to do, but it requires more than the police so to do those kinds of things.
Just to answer your timeline question, and really we ought to discuss it and speak with you afterwards, but my approach to the rapid issue was to get beyond the rewrite of the code, because that's taken a lot of attention and time, and then to sit down and, as soon as we're beyond this, move forward on that issue.
Okay.
So I would think within a couple of months,
okay,
I would have a pretty good recommendation.
Okay.
All right.
Further questions? Did you have anything to add to this?
Well, I guess I'd like to reiterate to the council that there are a number of thriving, small businesses that really would rather not, fall under this this code, and their business practices might, probably prove that they really don't have to. But a lot of us are willing to be a part of the process because it's so much better than it was before. An example of the whole, for instance, bike shops tend to. There's a lot of them in town, a lot of stores that now sell used bikes, following the examples that I sell with Cycle Repair and City Bikes, for example. The circles that bicycle folk tend to, go in, it's a small sort of tight-knit community. For example, any used, quote-unquote, used bike that is for sale by consignment at my shop, typically 50% of those bikes are owned by other people who work in the local bike industry. Some of them are brand new. People who work in bike shops can purchase equipment at wholesale and turn around and sell it at a profit. Tonight at a coaching clinic I'm putting on, we're going to have a raffle for a brand new bike that I got from a bike company for this raffle. There's a very good chance it's going to be in my store tomorrow for sale by consignment, because the chances are the person who's going to win it already has such a bicycle. So it's sort of a tight community, and I think the same can be said for music stores and maybe, high-end electronics stores where you're, dealing with a clientele that's sort of interested in electronics specifically. You see a lot of the same people over and over again. I don't expect that is a 100% guarantee that nothing can ever go wrong, but the way that most of us small specialty shops do business is, we rely on the fact that we're dealing with a regular small clientele, and we would really like to see, I think, this code, this ordinance move forward, because it's kind of the best thing we have going yet. All of us can work within this system. You don't like thumbprinting your customers, you don't have to if you decide to sell only by consignment, Or you really think you've earned the right to be excluded, you can seek sort of exception through the administrative rules clause. I think that's key, and that's something we didn't have before with the previous code. Thank you.
Thanks, folks. So do we have a sign-up list?
We have one person signed up, Tim Calvert.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record.
I'm Tim Calvert, and I work at – say that again?
You have 3 minutes.
Okay. Commissioner Leonard wondered about the electronic – I work at City Bikes. We buy and sell used bikes, also new bikes. We are kind of on, and a lot of the secondhand dealers are very much on the cutting edge of recycling in this city. The regulations around secondhand dealers have been around for like 20 plus years. There's been a lot of time spent dealing with secondhand dealer laws. And it's a very complicated, interesting issue. And the deeper you probe, like Commissioner Leonard was a little bit, the more complicated and contradictory feedback you get. One of the issues for City Bikes, and it hasn't been expressed much by the other secondhand dealers, is the civil rights of people buying and selling used product. Most people who only shop at new stores don't quite realize this, but when the current system is, when you sell any used product, you have to fill out an SDR form, and this SDR form is quite extensive, including a physical description of you, your driver's license, and if it's the whole nine yards, it's a thumbprint and a photocopy of your ID, and this SDR form goes to the police and is held on record indefinitely. The electronic system that is being gunned for right now would have the same biometric sweep and possibly even more for any person selling a product, meaning thumbprints, pictures, eye, retina, whatever, and it will be in a computer that will be accessible nationally or internationally by entities unknown. So it's a real invasion of privacy for people who are selling used product to have to give so much information, in particular when one realizes that the prosecution based on these forms, the number of people who are actually being prosecuted is extremely small. So regulations need to be weighed against how much they're actually being used to enforce theft. The electronic thing is a real, real invasion of privacy, and it's mostly aimed at poor people. And it's an unfair burden based on the fact that in addition to all those issues, you've got the issue of fenced goods are now being distributed not on brick-and-mortar secondhand dealer stores, but through the internet, of course. I mean, who wouldn't? You go to Craigslist, you go on eBay. If it's in a box, it's even better. And all this product is being sold online. So that's just one element of the whole secondhand dealer thing that is really complicated, and which is why regulations targeting brick-and-mortar secondhand stores that employ local Portlanders, the regulations have to be gentle because really the underground economy is thriving online, and we're not even getting to that problem at all. The metal theft, there are only five or six people who buy metal in Portland. Right. It's pretty easy.
So okay. In summary, do you support this or not?
I was really happy with working with Troy King and the whole process of trying to get a more reasonable secondhand dealer regulation going. This addresses some of the issues. It certainly doesn't address at all the internet issue or other issues surrounding that. The whole Walmart theft thing, that's a whole nother big topic, which I don't have time to get into.
So do you, you're sort of mixed on this?
I am mixed. I feel like it's a continued, the secondhand dealer system, it only sort of resembles reality. And so, you know, we're making all these regulations based on this idea that a thief will come to a secondhand dealer store and buy something or sell something, and that we're going to get all this information and then prosecute him. And it feels like we're spending a lot of city energy and time kind of chasing the wrong direction, doing a lot of data entry as opposed to going after the actual thieves. I mean, so I'm supportive because I feel like this regulation moves in a better direction, but it still has a long way to go. And a lot of discussion needs to happen before more regulations are.
Sure. Could we, could I have a little, thank you. Could I have a little discussion about the internet? Thank you for your testimony. Sort of what is, I guess, a legal question, what is our ability to internet, to regulate internet, and then operationally, what are we doing around the internet?
Internet cases come before our investigators weekly, if not daily. In the secondhand dealer code, we have done a couple things to step in that direction. We have required that people who are licensed as dealers reveal to us their internet addresses, their email addresses, and any eBay accounts and so on that they use to sell property. We just recently, 10 days ago, shut down a secondhand dealer who was using the internet to distribute what we believe, although couldn't prove, was stolen property. Using that internet tool, we have also worked with the definition of dealer in the code, and we've required that a person who is going to be a secondhand dealer have a physical location, a physical business location. so that if we find someone who is selling numerous items of regulated property and we're able to tie them to the city limits of Portland, and that's a key piece to this code, we'll be able to require them then to have a location, submit SDRs, and that sort of thing.
What about how are those stores that are like, bring your product in and we'll sell it for you on the internet, on eBay, whatever, are they regulated or focus of these improved efforts?
They are one of the types of entities that we want to address, as well as flea markets and some other venues for property. Under the current code, they would, in our interpretation, would be considered a consignment shop.
Okay.
And so we would address it, at least at the start, as a consignment shop, and then as we look into the issue and see if there are some unique challenges there, then we would have to amend the ARS.
And then what about, and I can imagine just how difficult this is, so, but what about those folks that don't go to the bricks and mortar, that don't go to the eBay expediter, that don't go to the consignment, but they just sort of sell stolen goods on eBay, and I can only imagine how hard that is, but can you give us a sense of how you try to sort of follow those threads?
One of the things we do is we have a lot of citizens that get their stuff stolen, check Craigslist and eBay to see if they can find their stuff. And as soon as they identify their stuff, they then call the Portland Police Bureau. Our detectives are then assigned to the case and try to recover that. There's been times where there was an engine that was stolen that was found on eBay, and the owner knew who, it was his engine, and our officers went out and posed as citizens and actually tried to purchase the engine, ended up, you know, arresting the people and stuff like that. So it's hit and miss. It's usually going to be the citizen who takes the effort to go to the internet, because oftentimes there's not serial numbers. It's just you got my stereo stolen, or I got my bicycle stolen, and they check for eBay and Craigslist the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, and they call us up. It's pretty common for us to go out and help people recover their items like that. It's a big problem.
I can only imagine. And it's there's nothing in our law that needs to. Is there anything in our laws as sort of a next phase, or you've said one or two improvements here that might aid in your efforts to do internet-only sales? Is there anything else that we need to be doing besides, you know, let's say additional personnel? I mean, is there laws that other communities have related to internet-only sales of stolen goods or used or new property that we need to pursue or could pursue? I know the internet regulation exclusions for local governments are pretty strong, aren't they?
The legal difficulty that's presented are, besides the fact that internet addresses afford some level of anonymity that has to be cracked before you can proceed with even doing an investigation, but the secondary level, and the one that presents probably a more difficult aspect, is that you may be dealing with somebody who's selling goods out of Colorado or California. And so we don't have any jurisdiction to prosecute. We don't have the ability to refer that to Multnomah County DA for prosecution. The DA doesn't have jurisdiction over that kind of a transaction. If it turns out that the theft is from Portland and the property's out of Portland, then that's another story. But
do we have jurisdiction in that example where the theft occurred here, but the picture was emailed back and managed by someone in Denver, and the sale was managed in Denver, but the property was mailed from here?
You're asking some very difficult questions, and whether or not we would have jurisdiction under those scenarios is something that eventually the DA would have to make a determination on, since they're the agency that eventually goes forward with prosecution. That might be something that they would refer to the U.S. Attorney's Office, because that's dealing with stolen goods in interstate commerce. And in some ways, the referral to federal prosecution carries more significant chance of jail time and stiffer penalties. So these are things that pose some very difficult questions, and I think the police bureau is doing the best job they can under this scenario, and whether or not it warrants further modification is probably something that experience will tell. This really is still an emerging area of law.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's not uncommon for people to come and steal from Portland and then take their stuff up to Seattle or vice versa. So this stuff travels. These guys know how to get around things. They adapt. That's their job, is to adapt. So mm-hmm. we do take them individually, and the federal government's not going to take a normal small case. It's going to take some big player before the federal government's going to get involved here. So it's mostly just precinct by precinct, citizens identifying their stuff, coming to us, and us doing the investigations.
So just to state the obvious, then, to echo your point, the Internet remains a escape valve for mm-hmm. a lot of this sort of illegal activity that we need help from the state and federal governments on.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Are there further questions?
Is this going to go to a second reading?
Yes.
So I just want to say one last thing. I think the industry knows some of what they could do to help us address this issue, and I've been trying to think of an example of that. The example I would give that I would hope the industry would consider unilaterally begin adopting is if somebody brings something in a new box and it has, the origin of the retail sticker on it, whether it's Walmart or Home Depot, I would hope the industry would set up a system where they warn people, if you bring in something in a new box, we're calling that retailer to make sure they haven't got it listed and their inventory is stolen. And then track that, write down what it is they purchased from the person, the date they called Walmart, who they talked to, and what the answer was, and keep a log. I mean, that seems to me to be, given the amount of volume of that kind of thing that happens, a very simple industry-driven approach that would make me feel like they're legitimately trying to help us solve this problem without us telling you to do it. And that approach would influence what I requested in this ordinance in the future, because I'll remember that I asked you to do that, and I'll be interested to hear what your reaction is in 2 months when we revisit this stuff again.
Good work.
Thank you. Yes, excellent job. Thank you. And Sergeant King, thank you. You and the folks from purchasing did a great job. Thank you. Move to the regular agenda. Please read item 1122.
Item 1122, authorized contract with Marsh USA, Inc. to provide disability management consulting services to the Bureau of Fire and Police Disability and Retirement of the City of Portland.
Staff, please come forward.
Good morning, Mayor Potter and council members. I'm Linda Jefferson, Director of the Bureau of Fire and Police Disability and Retirement. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to return today for you to consider this item.
Say that with feeling.
Yeah, you don't really mean that.
Say that with feeling, but it's very polite of you to say.
Of course, this is a contract to do an independent audit of the FPDNR program. A selection committee did determine that Marsh USA had the expertise mm-hmm. and the ability to do this particular project, and we're very anxious to move forward with the project so that we can be in compliance with the charter requirement. So thank you for your consideration. Do you have any questions?
Well, when this came up last week, it was a normal standard kind of thing that we do here to approve these kinds of contracts. Of course, the testimony that we heard was that systemically the problem, and this isn't to this contract, my concerns aren't about this contract. And I would also tell you that I understand that you've worked out an arrangement where a Mr. Feathers is satisfied. Just so I'm really clear, that doesn't address the issue that I have. And I'm happy he's satisfied, but what I heard him say is systemically we have a system where contractors, and not even Marsh contractor, but as I recall, it was a number of contractors in the language that I used, are gaming the system. They know what they have to do to get the contract. They get the contract, and some time down the road when a renewal of the contract is subject to just staff review, they drop the retention of a minority or woman or emerging business contractor. So my concern isn't necessarily this contract I understand you've worked it out with him on this. My bigger concern is what have we done? First of all, is that a legitimate criticism? Is that a phenomenon that's been occurring in your view? And second, if so, what have we done about that?
And for the record, I'm Jeff Baer, the director of the Bureau of Purchases. And after this issue was raised at the council meeting, we actually went back and looked at our PTE contracting process to see if it really was systemic in the way the city was contracting. And we had found some areas where there raised a number of concerns. And we have made some modifications over the past year or so in regard to really identifying from the point of the proposal to the actual contract execution to solidify those relationships. And we've also identified, actually our staff and I, myself, we worked together to identify five real key areas of which we think we can really tighten this thing up to ensure that this does not continue on. I think it has developed to some degree a bit of a loophole for firms. And as just sort of a personal experience, our Bureau had gone through an RFP process and the highest ranked proposer said they wanted to use a minority-owned firm, an Oregon-based firm, as part of their project team. And the first thing they did when we came to negotiating the contract is they said, can we eliminate that? And we said, absolutely not. That's a key part of the proposal. It's a commitment they've made, and we will not relinquish them from that commitment. So they went forward and carried out that fulfillment, and they've completed the project. So we found that.
I hear you saying in some instances that didn't happen.
I'm sorry?
Am I hearing you correctly saying in some instances that didn't happen?
That's
you
correct.
Caught that and you corrected that, but there are other instances where that didn't happen. So basically, what I'm asking is what we heard last week roughly a legitimate concern? And I'm hearing you say yes.
It was a legitimate concern, and we had made some tightening of it, but we can make some better refinements, suggesting.
I need to hear what that is.
Those are, I've actually identified five different ones. One is that in terms of the RFP itself, if a prime contractor or the proposer indicates their intent to work with a minority, women, emerging small business, that does not shift over from the proposal into and get lost into the contract negotiation. That's one. Second one is that the part of the proposal response that we require some sort of a memorandum of understanding or some other written commitment that prime contractor is going to carry forward into that contract and into the project. A third one was to actually require bureaus to submit a formalized substitution request if the prime contractor approaches the bureau and says, can we alternate and use somebody else, that they have to have a formal process to substitute that particular contractor or that subcontractor in that case. And also, I think
which would include asking who?
That would require the prime contractor to work with the project manager and the bureau staff, and then the bureau staff would request that from our bureau who do the compliance work to say.
You would be an outside entity checking correct. And balancing.
To see if it's a legitimate request.
Right. Because I obviously have a concern that the bureaus sometimes figure out how to take exceptions
right.
and maximize them.
Yep.
And so you'll be there to make sure that doesn't
yes.
happen.
Yes. Okay. And I think another one is a real key one where I think the council is familiar with the reports I often do for construction where we actually identify the percentage of the MWESB utilization on that contract. Because it's a decentralized process, the bureaus file the ordinances. We don't really see the ordinance or review those any level prior to them showing up on the council agenda. And I think a key part is to identify in the ordinance what's the percentage of minority, women, emerging small business participation on that particular contract. So those are my recommendations, and those are.
What do those take the form of? Administrative rules, resolutions? Well, how do we know that those are going to be rules that are adhered to?
With your support, I'm going to carry those out and embed them in our professional service contracting process, roll those out. I don't think it's nothing that really requires any formal action.
But if Jeff Baer's gone, how am I assured that those rules will stay in place and it's not just a personal commitment by you?
I guess I could come back with a resolution.
That's a great idea.
Okay.
Why don't you do that?
I will do that.
Thank you.
Further questions? Bruce, Mr. Feathers, you have been here for some time. Would you like to say a few words?
Yes. I want to save my 3 minutes. I'm Bruce Feathers. I brought the issue up last week. I want to comment on that piece. Separately from my 3 minutes in regard to last week.
Excuse me, so you're going to ask for an additional 3 minutes?
Well,
you got your time now. If it's 3 minutes, then we'll start the clock.
Okay. Well, let me focus then on.
Just remember, you're ahead right now.
First of all, I'm encouraged. I am encouraged by the position that the council have taken in regards to the support of MWESBs. I appreciate the stance that you've taken. During the interim period from 2 weeks ago, my investigation and my collaboration with Marsh has resulted in these 5 points of discovery I'd like to share. One, actually, Marsh did not abandon Featherlight in that contract. We still currently have a subcontract agreement that runs concurrently with the contract between Marsh and the city. Two, Marsh was not, quote, gaming the system. The confusion which brought me to council in the first place was associated with Marsh's previous project manager, who fostered an agreement between our two companies, which was ambiguous and was misinterpreted by Marsh officials and their current project managers. We have since reviewed that contract point by point, made the modifications to the satisfaction of both parties. Three, Featherlight is satisfied and convinced that this misunderstanding is not the general practice of Marsh, as it is with some prime contractors, as you've heard and I made reference to, who indeed do intentionally game the system by abandoning subcontractors and other form of MWESB misutilization. Four, to be sure, in good faith, Marsh has accelerated some of its contractual obligations to Featherlight in ways in which it's favorable to small businesses, and in this case, specifically, Featherlight. And five, finally, Marsh has committed to go beyond this particular contract and reach out to Featherlight for additional MWESB utilization opportunities as another good faith example of their willingness to include and assert their commitment to MWESBs as the business case allows. I've been asked by Marsh to update the council and or the city procurement staff prior to the end of the year as to this initiative by Marsh to create its own accountabilities. If I still have 48 seconds left, I've been working very closely with procurement in regards to these loopholes that was just mentioned, that Jeff just commented on, with the BIP 13 committee and the Fair Contracting Committee and other things. And these loopholes have been identified in a forum, the collaboration between minority businesses, emerging small businesses, and city staff. This loophole, if stopped, will revolutionize and significantly increase participation by these firms, because this is the way that prime contractors have been avoiding participation and involvement with MWESB firms for years. So I certainly support those loopholes identified by Jeff and his staff. Thank you. You have any questions of me?
Thank you. Was there anybody testify on this matter?
Just Mr. Feathers.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams.
Thank you for your work on this. Thank you, Mr. Feathers, for bringing this issue to our attention. I'm glad there was positive progress made on it, and I'm glad we're able to move forward your request for a contract. And we do vote on this because it's an emergency, right?
Yep. Second reading.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Well, the easy part is setting the goals. The hard part is getting them implemented. So good work, Jeff and Bruce. Thank you. Aye.
Honor?
Aye. Please read item 1123.
1123, authorized revenue bonds for urban renewal areas.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
I did receive the document from the PDC outlining the specific projects that were identified, which I appreciated. It was exactly what I was hoping to get, and I think probably will be part of the package we get in the future when we vote, which I think really helps the council understand better what it is we're voting to fund. Aye.
So, Sten.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 1124.
Authorize a one-time exception to Human Resources Administrative Rule 8.03 to allow hour-for-hour overtime for Fair Labor Standards Act exempt employees assigned to top off between October 15, 2007 and October 19, 2007.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Anna Canwit. I'm here for the Bureau of Human Resources. We brought this ordinance forward at the request of the Portland Office of Emergency Management. It impacts only those employees, both represented and non-represented, who are currently exempt from receiving overtime under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act. But those employees will be assigned to work top off during the exercise, will be expected to work 12-hour shifts, and in many cases, if not all, will still be expected to carry out their regular duties in addition. So that's why we've made the request for the hour-for-hour overtime. There are two represented groups that are impacted, the members of the Portland Police Commanding Officers Association and battalion chiefs represented by the Portland Firefighters Association. I spoke to both Dave Benson and Ken Burns about the ordinance, and they support it as well, and also provided a draft to the bureau directors who are most impacted by this, who have the bulk of the employees who will be assigned to top off. But it is limited only to the employees during the actual work they're doing for top off. We did include a cost estimate, but the cost for this is actually built into the budget for top off, so there wouldn't be additional funds coming out of the general fund.
Questions? Okay. Very good job.
Thank you.
Is anybody signed up to testify in this matter?
I didn't have a sheet out for this one.
Is anybody here who wishes to testify to this matter?
There was movement in the back.
There was movement, but obviously.
Wow.
This is,
I thought that was
That was dramatic.
That was dramatic.
Urgency, please call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Sten.
Aye.
Potter.
Wow.
She's going to test it. You're positioning yourself.
Please read the next item.
1125. Authorize a sole source purchase with International Business Machines Corporation to provide professional, technical, and expert services for the Portland Department of Transportation Maximo system.
Yes, Mayor Potter and Commissioners, I'm Jennifer Sims, the City's Chief Financial Officer and the project sponsor for the Enterprise Business Solution Project. I was just getting ready, trying to be timely. This ordinance authorizes the city purchasing agent to issue a sole source purchase order to IBM for the purchase of professional, technical, and expert services for the Portland Department of Transportation's IBM Maximo system, in order to interface with the city's new SAP software. IBM Maximo designed, developed, and maintains the licensed Maximo software program. They possess the in-depth knowledge of the software, and the software is proprietary and can only be customized or modified by IBM. The city's implementation of the SAP software as part of the Enterprise Business Solution Project will enable the city to integrate its financial and resource information and retire its antiquated IBIS system and associated shadow systems and provide a modern computing platform that supports continued business changes and e-government initiatives. I encourage you to approve this ordinance. Thank you. Matt Lamp and Joyce Raymond are here with me to answer any questions, PDOT and the Bureau of Technical Services.
Questions from commissioners? Thank you, folks. Is anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
No.
Is anybody here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's emergency, please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Stanton?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1126.
Authorized contract with Walker Macy LLC for $855,186 to provide planning, design, and construction administration for services for implementation of South Waterfront Greenway Central District.
Thank you for being here. I just want to, Commissioner Saltzman is not able to be here, so he asked me to read this. This ordinance approves the contract with Walter Macy, the design consultant, recommended through the proposed evaluation process. A development agreement between PDC and the developers in the South Waterfront District requires the city to complete the South Waterfront Greenway Phase 1 in the Central District by July 1, 2009. It's important to approve this contract today because any delay in executing this agreement will substantially affect the ability to meet the schedule for the project. There is no general fund impact as a result of this contract, and park staff are here to answer questions. Have any questions from commissioners? Has anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
No sign up.
Is there anybody here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's emergency. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Recessed until 6 p.m.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got Ken Burns in 1 minute.